For everyone listening, Luke, Knut, and I are going to be doing something together with the Bitcoin Times. For those who know about the Bitcoin Times, know that it was a high quality publication.
From our side, we'd known about Bitcoin Times from its reputation in the community, this collectible magazine that had long form articles from the best, biggest voices in the space, really.
But it's just something that I don't have the time nor the level of desire or interest to keep leading. 2025 is going to be special.
We've got a whole bunch of things coming up, honestly, that are really intensifying our ability to facilitate this Bitcoin educational initiative or Bitcoin philosophical think tank.
We're going to take over the Bitcoin Times.
Alex, welcome back to the Bitcoin Infinity Show.
Gentlemen, good to see you.
Good to see you, Alex.
Again.
Last time we saw each other was in Buenos Aires, where you wanted to kill everyone.
Basically. What's new? You know what it is? At the end of every year, I think I'm ready to kill everyone. And I need to like then switch off, go away, and then I come back and I'm like more zenned out again. I think maybe the solution is I need to go away twice a year. So that way, before I get to the point of wanting to stab everybody, I kind of like have a chance to segue. Anyway.
Yeah, no, jokingly, you didn't want to kill everyone. You hardly wanted to kill anyone. I could tell you were a bit fatigued from doing too many conferences and doing too many things for a long time. And I think you've found your zen again here. It feels like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm feeling better. Got away a little bit, so much better.
And you have a lot of things. Like, there's a lot of news. Like, the big thing is... Yeah, well, you're obviously working on Satlantis, and we talked about that last time quite a bit. So if you want to check out what Satlantis is and how awesome it is, you should check out Alex's previous episode. And we also talked a bit about the Bushido of Bitcoin, which is out now, which is your magnum opus, if you will. Could I call it that? It's a big-ass book that you wrote.
It's a giant, yeah, 530 pages. I think I have it here. It is...
Oh, holy.
The giant. It's bigger than me, which is not that big. I'm kidding.
Still quite big. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's 530 pages, 130,000 words. It's a monster. And there is actually a part two in the making, because I had to pull a big chunk out of the book, which was quite complete, but I couldn't figure out where to put it without, kind of disorienting the order and the structure that I have of the book. Plus, I was trying to find things to cut because the book was just getting excessively long. I think I was at 150,000 words or whatever. So when I did that, I kind of sectioned it out, and there will be a part two. And part two of it'll be basically, I'm going to do the Bushido Bitcoin series. So the second book will be called The Metaphysics of War and Beauty. That's the second one that I'm working on. It's going to be quite another book to challenge people. Like, this one definitely will challenge Bitcoiners, and this next one will challenge a larger audience.
So, I mean, the Bushido of Bitcoin is sort of Alex channeling his inner Nietzsche, right? if I get it right.
Yeah, a mixture of that. So it's kind of like channeling some blend of Nietzsche, Hopper, and Christianity, and obviously Japanese history. So it's, you know, whatever that Venn diagram is there.
Oh, yeah. If, with you in the middle.
Correct. Yeah. Trying to hold it all together. You know that meme with the button, trying to hold it all?
Yeah. Did you see the Venn diagram for John Lennon, where the two circles, like being a good songwriter, being a good poet, and they're separate. And then there's a big blob of being a decent person, and it's also separated from the others.
Yeah.
So it's almost there. Anyway.
Almost.
yeah, I remember we had we figured out some similarities between, or a lot of similarities between our Clown World book, The Inverse of Clown World, and Bushido Bitcoin, when back in BTC Prague, when was that, June or something? May or June?
June. Yeah.
So we had a long walk and we talked about your book and our book, and figured out that they're very similar, like, because we came to similar conclusions. About stuff. I remember you had you asked me about the word virtue and using the word virtue, or if you should pick another word, and further we were brainstorming about that. Do you remember that?
Did we get onto that from discussing why I didn't pick morality as the word?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah, the interesting stuff is always in the nuance. And that's, I think, one of the problems of the modern world is that people have lost nuance. Like, most people are fucking either black or white or stupid, right? And the challenge is finding someone to discuss the nuance with, and basically the dance between the things. So one example is I just listened to a good podcast that was basically breaking down Jordan Peterson's position on the history of the West, and really his emphasis on the Bible as the founding basis of the West. And, you know, he focuses very much so in like the Judean world. And he basically completely skips Greece, Rome, Macedonia, the Norse, the Germanic tribe. Like, he fucking skips all of that. And like, that's really where that's European history. That's the history of the West there. Like, you know, Christianity forms a part of it, but and particularly the Judeo component, like real Christianity is actually a European concept. Had Europe not existed, had Alexander not crossed into Asia, had Rome not been built, Christianity would never have made it to the West, right? So it's, that's a whole other tangent. But listening to this podcast, there was just a lot of nuance in the discussion because, you know, Nietzsche and I guess the traditional concept of Christianity were not actually that far apart. What Christianity sort of devolved into was what Nietzsche had a problem with. And most modern people who would consider them Christian, they just sort of hear the word Nietzsche and they're like, oh, you know, he wrote the Antichrist, so he must be evil. And they kind of like throw the baby out with the bathwater. And it's really shallow thinking. It's an inability to play with nuance. And yeah, that's one of the things I like about our discussions is that we can dance around the nuance, we can tussle, we can wrestle, and that's how you come up with shit.
Funnily enough, this morning I watched the celebration of Hitchmas, if you know what that is. So it's a bunch of people celebrating Christopher Hitchens, which was one of the four horsemen of the new atheist movement like 15 years ago. So it was a panel with Douglas Murray, Richard Dawkins, what's his name? Lawrence Krauss and Stephen Fry, which was like the intellectual dark web, quote unquote, 15 years ago. And they're all kind of lefty. But Christopher had like a very special, I mean, he was part of, I probably wouldn't have found Bitcoin if it wasn't for that guy, because he was so good at just poking holes at empty arguments and calling people idiots. And I really love that aspect of it. And there were some really funny back and forths about Jordan Peterson and about what Christopher would have thunk about, like, the woke religion. Like, he was bashing religion a lot, and like what he would have thought of the latest fads with transgender stuff and all of this. And how he compared back in the day, how he compared, he traveled to North Korea and how he compared that to Catholicism and the similarities between the deity in being Mr. Kim in North Korea and the Pope, like the similarities between them. So there's some interesting stuff there because this is coming from a completely different angle.
Yeah, although I think that's a pretty shallow angle. I think there's a lot of tradition in Catholicism that doesn't exist in North Korea. Like, North Korea is a modern construct. But yeah, maybe some surface level similarities.
Yeah. Anyway, where was I? I had a thread here. Luke, help me out here.
Well, I think that the thing we were talking about is the a lot of the intersection that we've been dancing around between our various books and the projects that we've been working on is something about having these discussions about the important things in Bitcoin and in life generally. A common thread, I think, for all three of us has definitely been that Bitcoin is one extremely important aspect of life, but the philosophical side, the philosophical angle of Bitcoin has to fit in with this this frame. It all has to make sense somehow. And I mean, I've always looked at Bitcoin from this kind of philosophical lens. And I know the two of you also do as well. And basically, I think one of the things that started to come out of Prague, I hope this is where you were going with this, Knut, but I think it's logical anyway, is that the three of us are pretty darn aligned in terms of the importance of facilitating these discussions and getting the word out about Bitcoin generally and what it means to us and making it clear why this is important. And so we've been doing our own little thing for the last couple of years, Knut and I. We've had these this podcast, and Knut's obviously been doing books for a while before that. But now we're getting pretty serious about really growing this thing that we're doing, and we've got a whole bunch of things coming up, honestly, that are really intensifying our ability to facilitate this, so to say, Bitcoin educational initiative or Bitcoin philosophical, I don't know, think tank, mind meld, whatever it is. And one of these things that we came up with in Prague was the Bitcoin Times magazine. Basically, from our side, we'd known about Bitcoin Times from its reputation in the community. This collectible magazine that had long form articles from the best, biggest voices in the space, really. And maybe there was something that we could do with you on this. And so basically, I think where we are is that we're working together on the Bitcoin Times going forward. And maybe I can hand it off to you now, Alex, to
let me take over, because I think that there's 2025 is going to be special. So for everyone listening, Luke, Knut, and I are going to be doing something together with the Bitcoin Times. But before I get onto that, I just want to say part of the thing that's happened to me over the last 12 months, and Knut, you'd probably know this more than anyone, because I've become a little bit of a, not a Bitcoin bear, but a Bitcoin I don't care kind of guy. Like I've sort of started to slowly like extract myself from the community. The new business I'm running, Solantis, as much as it's got like some element of Bitcoin stuff about it, it's really not a Bitcoin product. It's not really built for Bitcoiners either. Like there's Bitcoiners will find utility there. But I'm going for a different market. Likewise, my next book, The Metaphysics of War and Beauty, while it's an extension to this, it's not really a book about Bitcoin, and neither is this one for that matter. Like I'm just sort of, I've reached a point in my personal and professional journey where Bitcoin is less important to me. It's something that I want to see recede in the background. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't still hold all of the things that I came across as true and as important and as necessary to help other people know. I think that is definitely still important. The thing is, my interest is just taking me somewhere else. And for those who know about the Bitcoin Times and who know that I started it back in 2018 or whatever it is, and who are watching the different editions come out, etc., know that it was a high quality publication, but it's just something that I don't have the time nor the level of desire or interest to keep leading. And I think, the older you get, the more, I don't know if this is just me or if it's everyone as they get older, but I want to do less things and I want to do them better. I think in my 20s, I wanted to do everything and I wanted to do it as good as possible. And I think I just burnt a lot of gas in the process. We were just discussing before we got on the call about how I went off to Patagonia for about a week and I completely switched off. Turned off my phone, turned off, like basically left the screens away and had to drive around without a fucking GPS, right? Like, so just trying to figure it out and going and paying for food and at the restaurant and everything in cash. So like just disconnected from the world and it felt so good. And I guess a big initiative for me in 2025 is to do less and to do it of higher quality, because I've reached the point in my life where I don't want to be spinning too many plates. And so this, I think the match here is very nice, because you guys, as far as I understand, are really doubling down as a brand in the Bitcoin space. And that's no longer my intention. I don't want to be a brand in the Bitcoin space anymore. In fact, I've even honestly thought about just completely nuking all of my socials, just wiping everything and just forget about being a brand of any sort. The challenge there is, obviously, would like to see the book continue to do its thing. And, you know, a bit of a personal brand does help with business. So I guess I need to decide how to use it and what to do about it. But yeah, I to kind of finish up what you were saying as a first step, and then we can go dig into the history a little bit. I could not think of a better sort of like face or a better sort of fit for the Bitcoin Times, like to take it on and to move it forward, because it's got potential and it definitely needs to be in the world, because there's another, what, 7 billion people who don't have Bitcoin properly or whatever it is. Like, that's a lot of people. And as we all know, and this is not going to change, Bitcoin is going to end up being used by everyone. That's not an if, it's just a when. And along that way, people need to learn and understand about it. And I think this publication has the potential to really reach and impact a lot of people in that capacity. So I'll shut up there, but that's a bit of why, for me, this is an interesting time in life.
Well, thank you for your kind words and for leaving Bitcoin Times with us. We consider it a great honor. A couple of things to unpack there. First, what guarantee do we have that you're not going to come back in a couple of weeks and say that everyone that goes offline for 5 days is completely stupid and you want to kill them?
No guarantees. Sorry, Kanu, there's no guarantees in life.
No, but I think like one of the things where we found like how aligned we are is this notion of quality being the opposite of equality. I think that's like perfect. That's the in the middle of the Venn diagram between us three, I think. So we're going to take over the Bitcoin Times, and this is where 2018, you said you started the thing?
2018, yeah, exactly. So 2018, I wrote the first one, and we released it in January, I think, of 2019.
Let's go into how Bitcoin Times started and where it's going. So let's start where it started, like in the beginning. The first issue is mostly you.
Do you actually know the story or not?
Well, I think we know, but maybe our listeners don't.
I'll pretend I don't.
Yeah. So the story. So here's how it happened. I'm gonna go back to the very, very beginning. It was 2017, and it was 2018. 2018. I got invited to this conference for capital raising, and it was a company called Wholesale Investor. They were in Australia. They'd been around for years. They used to do like this magazine where people would like pitch their idea, for example, and the magazine would only go out to people who are qualified accredited investors, and which in Australia is called a wholesale investor. And that's how people would raise capital, right? Like, it was one of the mechanisms. And as things evolved, they ended up, you know, building out a website, and they used to run these sort of biannual summits where they'd invite a bunch of companies and you'd exhibit, right? So I went, and this was in the early days of Amber when I was still raising money, early stage. And it was right when it was right in the middle of the ICO boom, right? Every Tom, Dick, and Harry was like pulling out a token for whatever, right? And I go to this event. So this is mid-2018, and I am the only quote unquote crypto company there. Like, I'm the only Bitcoin company there. And there's a bunch of other companies like data science and B2B this and whatever. Every single one of those had a token, and I'm the only actual Bitcoin crypto-related company without a token. And it was like this wild experience. I was like, what fucking planet have I walked into? And everyone's on stage talking about their stupid token, So I get up on stage to give my talk, and my talk was about how it was something to do with like crypto being the AOL of the internet, so, something like that. And I just basically took a shit all over crypto and I blew up the notion of ICOs. And I could see the organizer in the back of the room, like his face just got increasingly pale throughout the talk. And basically at the end of the talk, half the audience like collapsed like crazy. And the other half of the audience, like you could feel like they wanted to kill me. And, you know, I get off the stage and, you know, I basically get this alternate of, do you know how much money you just fucking cost me versus, oh my God, thank you. I've been sitting here all day listening to people talk and I have no idea what the fuck they were talking about. And you're the first person who made sense. Like that was like the two general responses and reactions that I got. And I ended up raising quite a bit of money out of that because like people came to me, they were like, thank you for actually like raising money in a legitimate way. And anyway, the organizer comes up to me and he says, you are officially banned from our conference. Please never come back again. You cost all of our sponsors an incredible amount of money, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, I'm like, okay, no worries. Get fucked. 6 months later, the same organizer messages me. And if you remember, 6 months later, end of 2018, ICO bubble had burst. Everything had collapsed. Everyone lost all their money, all this sort of stuff. And he kind of sheepishly reaches out. He's like, oh, you know, we had some harsh words at the end of the last conference, blah, blah, blah. But you know what? In the end, you were right. And I've had so many people reach out to us requesting you to come back and give another talk because you saved all the money, this and that. And he goes, look, don't worry. This year, there is no ICOs. This year, it's about blockchain technology. And I was like sitting there, I was like, okay. And you want me to come and talk about blockchain technology? He's like, yeah, I think you're the right person for this. You gave one of the most knowledgeable talks and everything. And I was like, okay. He's like, but this time you have to run the talk by me. And I was like, okay, no worries. So I went away and I put together this talk about how blockchain is dead. The future is on Lightning. That was the emphasis of the talk. But that's obviously not what I called the talk. I called the talk the future of blockchain is on Lightning or something like that. I kind of like kept it relatively vague because these guys were like classic NPC midwits. Like they don't understand anything. So anyway, I go to this next conference and it's the same thing. I tell the AV guy, I switch out the USB at the last minute. And I'm like, oh, I just had some updates on my talk. Puts this new talk in, get up on stage. So this talk was supposed to be about this, but then I swap to the next thing and I go, this talk is really about the death of blockchain. And I see the guy in the background at the back of the room again and his face goes white. He's like, this motherfucker did it to me again. And I give this whole talk about how blockchain is a total scam. It's a stupidity. It's just a bunch of buzzwords and all this sort of, all the stuff that we know, right? But I had too much to say on the talk. Like there was just way too much information there. So I put it all into this like flyer, this pamphlet that I wanted to give away on the day. And we just called that the Bitcoin Times. So that basically edition one is the extension of the talk that I gave at that conference. It was the extended notes and that was the genesis of the Bitcoin Times.
So that's the first issue.
That was the first issue. Yeah, that was the genesis of the Bitcoin Times. So then basically that got a bunch of, that kind of somewhat put me on the map because I had only started using Twitter in 2018 and I was relatively unknown. There was a prior essay that I did where it was Bitcoin versus Bitcoin Cash. That was the one that got me on the map. Tua de Meester and Giacomo Zucco picked it up and I had no idea who the fuck these two people were because I was just a total noob on Twitter and I was like, oh, okay, cool. And then all of a sudden, like I went from 3 followers to like 500. And that's where my Twitter journey effectively began. And the second edition was, I had basically at that point, entered the Bitcoin community, quote unquote. I went to my first conference, which was in San Francisco. It was Bitcoin 2019. And that's where I met Odell there. I met Marty Ben. We did a podcast discussing the first edition, all this sort of stuff. And towards the end of the year, I was like, man, I should totally do something else with the Bitcoin Times. Like it's a cool name. The first edition was really nicely designed. Everyone liked it. So I reached out to a couple people who at the time were pretty much unknown, unless you were like really interconnected in the Bitcoin space. And those people were Breedlove, Gigi, Rory Whiteside. If I don't know if too many people know him still, he was one of the toxic Bitcoin maxis in Australia. Haas McCook. Disappeared now.
Yeah, I miss Haas McCook.
Yeah, he was a legend. There was Nick Carter as well, before he kind of went a little crazy. And who else was there? Connor Brown. Connor was also disappeared as well. One more. Oh, and Dan Held. Yeah, fucking Dan. So anyway, that was the first round, right? That was like a collective edition. And it was great, man. Like that one really did the rounds. And then it was the third edition, so the year after, which was 2020, that kind of put Bitcoin Times properly on the map. So the first edition put me on the map. Second edition was me getting integrated into the community. And the third edition was like the one that went really well because that had some massive names. So that was Jimmy Song, it was Giacomo, it was Eric Kaysen, it was Jeff Booth. It was Parker Lewis and myself. So that was it was six solid essays. So some of the best I think that have ever been in there. And then yeah, the year after we did the third edition was called the Promethean, and then the fourth edition, it's escaping me at the moment. God damn it! What was the name of the edition? A New Hope. That's right. A New Hope. That's what it was called. And it was the year after, obviously, like. We were still right in the middle of all the stupidity, but I think by the end of 2021, things had started to kind of die down a little bit. And I think Brandon Quidham's best essay that he's ever written was in there. I think
Mycelium thing.
Bitcoin is a pioneer species.
Oh yeah, so, yeah.
I think
that's the one, isn't it? Yeah, that is the article, right? Like it's that's his. Yeah, that's awesome.
It's the name of it. Yeah, Bitcoin is a pioneer species. Yeah, fantastic essay. So there was that. I think one of my better ones as well, the Fire Bitcoin Teleportation is in there. And there's a couple pieces from, who else? Peter Sanonji.
Oh, yeah.
He was in there.
Peter Sanonji wasn't that big back then, was he?
He was not. Exactly. Yeah. So like Bitcoin Times, like it had people before they took off basically. It was really good. And then obviously number five was the Austrian edition. It was the first one that had a really good, like, cohesive theme, right? And that was Seyfedin, Pierre. It was Bitstein's first essay back after being off for like 3 years or whatever it was. Konrad Graf, who wrote an excellent piece, and
both those are so underrated, like Bitstein and Konrad Graf. They're
very much so
criminally underrated.
Very much so. And Rahim as well.
Another criminally underrated guy.
Absolute genius. And yeah, me and Rahim actually, his piece was great because he's like, God damn it. Like if there's a guy who is like truly an encyclopedia on Austrian economics and Austrian history and all that sort of stuff, he's the guy. Like, holy shit. Like he's so knowledgeable. He's someone I sit down with and just like talk about ask him any random question to do with like these kind of topics. And he's read a book on it. He knows about it. I'm like, what the fuck?
No, I view him as the heir to the throne. Like it's Mises, Rothbard. Even if you go further back, it's like Menger, Mises, Rothbard, or Böhmbaweg, Menger, Mises, Rothbard, Hoppe, and then Rahim. Like,
He's super knowledgeable. So that was number five, and his piece was great in there. He actually did more of a historic look at the Austrian tradition and how it came to be, and that was really educational. Like I love reading the pieces that genuinely teach me something new, and that was a standout for me for sure. And then the energy edition was that last year or the year before? God help me, I've lost count of the years now. I think it was the year before that it was supposed to come out, but there was delays with it. And I think it came out 2024, actually. So the Energy Edition, Marty Bent, Brian Gitt, Andrew from Satoshi Energy. There was an excellent piece in there from the guy who runs Choya, what's his name? He's in the Bitcoin mining space. He comes from like a family of wildcatters, and like he wrote this piece about like basically energy abundance and the limiting factor of human civilization economics just being ingenuity more than anything else. Like he pulled it from Julian Simon, who's like this economics/physicist, very interesting guy. I'd never heard of him before, and his whole argument is that we don't run out of atoms. Like the atoms are there. What we are short on at any particular point in time is the ingenuity and the capacity to extract or harvest the energy from those atoms or those materials or those substances. That's the only real limiting factor. So that was a very, very, very interesting piece. And yeah, that brings us to now. So that was the six original editions and a bit of a overview of the history of the Bitcoin time. Started as a troll and ended in a worthy application. Publication.
No, it's fantastic. And I remember, like, I think we met in, I mean, first time we met in real life was in Mexico, I believe, in 21.
Yeah, I think so.
And after that in Miami 22, and that's where you showed me the Bitcoin times for the first time, I think. And we had talks back and forth a couple of times after that of if I'm going to contribute something to the magazine. And here we are, like taking over the whole thing.
Yes,
it's just surreal. But yeah, where we intend to take it and to keep the tradition up and to keep them themed and this high quality. We really want top-notch brand Bitcoin essays in Bitcoin. And it's, which sounds like a tough thing to do, but there's one a year. so you really have time to talk people into doing it and picking the right ones for the right issue. So looking forward to the taking the helm of the ship. It's really Luke taking the helm of the ship, though, isn't it, Luke?
I mean, in terms of our organization for this, maybe a little bit behind the curtain of our enterprise generally is that everything that we're doing kind of on the publishing side is I'm kind of taking the lead on that. But I also really like this project. And I think since we discussed taking this on, I've always had a lot of interest in being involved with it, and it would be great to be able to take this thing forward and really help to build out this thing and amplify the voices that we work with in the space. I mean, this is in a lot of ways, this is sort of tying together everything that we're doing with podcasting, which in a lot of ways for anyone listening, the biggest benefit I think of doing this generally and listening to all the voices in the space is just getting to know everyone and who's doing what and who's saying something important and really figuring that out, you know. And I feel really privileged to get to do this all the time. And then when moving into the book publishing side, and I think this was actually even the first thing we even talked about with this was that paperback editions of the Bitcoin Times was ready. And let's bookmark this as far as like all the different formats of Bitcoin Times. But to get paperbacks out basically was one of the goals of this thing. And we'd been figuring out how to get all of Knut's books out in a good proper fashion, better than self-publishing. So to say, that's at least what we try to be, is better than self-publish. But I'm coming to a point, I promise. The main thing is that through Bitcoin Times now, what my hope is that we can also bring together all the people that we're talking to and hey, these are the issues of the day. And get them into a format that is timeless. The first edition really does feel like a snapshot of that point in time. And
it really was.
Yeah, and reading those articles, it's like this is important. This is part of history, and this is something that anyone can look at into the future at what this era was, and even going further into the further issues, it's like what's important at the time and bringing this forward in the future. So yeah, I guess this is all just to say I'm really excited about this.
And, you said a key word there in history, and this is something I wanted for the Bitcoin Times from the beginning. Is that I chose to do one edition a year, and the original vision, and I mean this might change. And we can discuss this as we go, but the idea was to do 21 editions over 21 years and to sort of make it a piece of history. And I like the idea of starting something with like a set end goal. You know, maybe Satoshi seemed to like the same thing, you know, wanting to just, you know, end the mining in 2140. But I think there's something to be said about that, and not this sort of like perpetual have to, you know, work and build something forever, right? Like, sure, it could be something that has ended up, you know, with 100 editions and, you know, we pass it to our kids or whatever. But I think this sort of idea of 21 editions over 21 years during a period of the most formative time for Bitcoin, I think is very powerful. And the fact that there's a paperback, which is accessible to anybody, and a collectible, which is limited in nature, gives it a special feel, right? It's people who discover the Bitcoin Times for the first time in edition 14 or 15, for example, will be like, damn, I want this collectible. And now I want the prior collectibles. And I'm going to go and grab all those prior collectibles so that I have the whole set, right? And they'll know that that set is one of 2100. They'll never be more than that many. And I can't give you the same guarantee as Bitcoin can. But it's, you know, there's a high, like these are collectibles, and I guess you'll have to trust us in the process of producing that. So yeah, I don't think people do stuff like that. I shouldn't say anymore, but it's far more rare. There's we spoke about quality and equality earlier. There's also quality and quantity, right? And they're usually inversely related. If you increase the quantity of the money infinitely, you infinitely decrease the quality of it. And so these things are somewhat related. So anyway, that's, when you said history, that just reminded me of that. Is like, I hope this is something that people 50, 100 years from now look back on and be like, oh, these crazy bastards, you know, put together these 21 editions, and each one, the older it was, the more fantastic it sounded at the time. But each year proved them right, not only again and again, but decades from now, they were proven right looking back at these essays and issues. So I think it's really cool.
The thing that comes to mind for me here is similar but yet different magazine, and that is Citadel 21, which is Hodlonaut's project. You remember that he also, you have to trust his word, but there's 1,000 copies of each edition of that. But that came out like every 2 months, I believe, or maybe once a month.
It was monthly, yeah. I think it was monthly.
Either monthly or every 2 months. I think it might have been every 2 months in the beginning and then monthly later on. But he only made 21 editions of it. And that was really cool. It was some of my best performing articles ever were in that magazine. And I had a lot of them in there. So like, that's my experience with working with a magazine and in Bitcoin before. And yeah, there are similarities.
I mean, yeah. He nailed it with that. And I mean, when I saw that it was doing one a month, I was like, this guy's fucking crazy. I was like, it was for Jets. Yeah. Like, the amount of effort that went into doing one a year for me was too much. And I was like, one a month? That's nuts. But yeah, it's a mammoth of an effort.
Hey there, dear listener. I hate to interrupt you like this in the middle of the show, but we'd like to tell you a couple of things about, for instance, the Bitcoin Infinity Store, where you can find our new book, Bitcoin, the Inverse of Clown World. It's a great book. I think you should get it as soon as you can. And we have some other stuff too, don't we, Luke?
Absolutely. First, I think we'd just like to tell you about our great partners. First up is Bitbox. They're our favorite hardware wallet, super easy to use, and they don't compromise on their security features at all. So we really recommend them. Check them out at bitbox.swiss/infinity. And by the way, you can use code infinity just about everywhere in the Bitcoin space, and probably you'll get a discount. We'll see. And the other one is the Stampseed seed plate. This is something that has been really well received. This Everything Divided by 21 Million seed plate. So check that out at stampseed.com. You can get our link in the description as well for another discount.
And don't forget to follow us on X and Noster and all other places you can find on the internet.
Exactly. In fact, we're on TikTok and Instagram and all these other places.
No, Luke, we're not on TikTok and Instagram. Well, we are on Instagram.
We are on TikTok as well.
Oh, we're on TikTok too?
Okay. Well, follow us there if you want to help spread the word.
Yes, brush your teeth.
All right, back to the show.
So let me ask you guys then, considering you'll be taking this over and driving it, what's the plans for 2025 and what's the plans for beyond that? Maybe I should throw this to Luke, actually, since he's going to be driving the train.
Yeah, totally. So the plan here is, first of all, we want to get collectible editions out for issues 1 and 2. They never had a print release, or at least a print release in the collectible format. And so we want to fix that and get those out into the world. It's content here, and it's completing everyone's collections. So basically that's the first priority. We're going to have pre-orders for these out on Geyser fairly soon here. And that's our first action, is to complete those. The second thing that we're doing somewhat in parallel is releasing paperback editions for all of the first 6 issues of the Bitcoin Times. So this was what I was getting at in terms of format, was that there's these collectible editions, 2,100 of them, period. And those have a higher price, obviously, because they're scarce. But accessibility has been an important theme. And this is in all of the issues, or at least it's in all of the paperback issues as they were drafted, is what are all of the formats. And first of all, the essays are freely available on bitcointimes.io. So it's not like the information isn't free. That's the purpose, is to get the information out there. Then also the paperback editions are meant to be for those who want to have a physical copy, but you know, the collectible edition, maybe you're not quite there in terms of buying something a little more expensive, right? So the paperback is there to be more accessible for that. And I mean, the thing about this is that it's anthologies of articles on related topics. So really they're books that are just collections of essays, as opposed to one author writing an entire book on the topic. But it's a really good way to dig into one of these specific topics. And that's something we certainly plan to continue, is keep this theme going. Maybe we'll revisit some past themes in some way, but every one of the editions will have its own sort of take or spin or central concept. So the paperback editions are all just about ready. These will all definitely be released within 2025, even maybe first half of 2025. I don't want to promise, but yeah, these are all basically ready to go here. And so those are happening in parallel. The reissue, so to say, of issues 1 and 2, or at least the launch of the collectible edition, and then the paperback launch for editions 1 to 6. And then finally, we've been working on edition number 7. So after basically the energy issue coming out last year, now we want to get another edition out in 2025. So that's 100% the goal. The macro edition is the working title for that. I think that's probably going to stick. Coming at this from 3 different fronts here. I think second half of 2025 is what we're looking at for edition number 7.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the macro edition, because I think people need to get excited about that. So I originally had a lineup. So we had Lynn Alden on the lineup, Jeff Booth he will be the first person making a second appearance. Now, not confirmed whether Jeff is going to write a piece or if he's going to write the foreword. We had a maybe from Preston Pish. We had, what's his name, Dylan LeClaire. James Lavish said yes as well. And Larry Lepard. That's who I remember. So that's the lineup. So it's a stellar lineup. There's a couple names in there yet to be confirmed. So if anyone has if anyone's listening to this and has some suggestions, if we're missing anyone, please let us know. But that's who I've got.
Fantastic lineup. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so, I mean, I think the thing is everything we can expect from those names. And I mean, the idea of macro, I think, is it's important from the perspective of that what's going on in the world affects everything with Bitcoin. And we all kind of are driving towards this number go up thing. And there are factors outside of Bitcoin that are affecting how this journey is going to play out. And so there are great people in the space who know this stuff, who know about markets, traditional markets, and things that maybe people who are deep into the Bitcoin space don't understand or don't really pay attention to these external things. And so, I think of the macro angle as the closest thing to a crystal ball on looking into a crystal ball on how Bitcoin is going to play out over the next few years. And then you can sort of understand that you might need to throw away 90% of it, but because it's just going to do whatever it does. But having some understanding, and all of these names are incredibly bullish people. Having spoken to them, I think actually all of them on this topic. So anyway, everyone on that list is incredibly bullish, right? And hearing explanations of why from people who understand this stuff, I think, is one of the best ways of convincing people who are more tied into the traditional system. And this is important, right? Because we need adoption from every angle. And I mean, I don't really care what your opinion is of people who have wealth in the traditional financial system, speaking to hypothetical listener X. Whatever. But the main thing is people with capital are important to have in Bitcoin. No matter what. And these voices are some of the best who know how to talk to people with capital who may be interested in Bitcoin as a whole. So I think the macro edition is perfectly timed right now with the rise of ETFs, with the rise of what was the word that Corey used for, he's starting to use it on Twitter all the time for these MicroStrategy clones.
Yeah, it was a good word.
It was a good word. He's used it on Twitter a bunch. But anyway, with the rise of all of these sort of Bitcoin derivative instruments, it's a really great time to be talking about this stuff. So I'm excited for the macro edition for what it can bring to the discourse in 2025.
LBEs, right?
Well, what is it? What does that stand for, though?
Bitcoin. Equity something, L something Bitcoin equity.
Right.
I wish I remember this.
Right. Like leveraged Bitcoin equities.
Leveraged Bitcoin equities.
As in like the stocks leverage themselves to buy more. And then if you buy the stock, then you're buying basically leveraged Bitcoin long.
Yes.
Interesting. Right. So we have a pod coming out with Corey Clipston on this topic. I'm going to guess actually it's going to be out after this episode. We'll see. But we've talked to him before. We've already talked to him. Let's see. Anyway, so looking to the future, yeah, like the main thing here is collecting, having the finger on the pulse of what's important in the Bitcoin ecosystem. So we're going to be looking at that through 2025. What are the themes that are coming up the most? I mean, the thing about creating something timeless and a historical snapshot, from my perspective, the main thing here is to not be too behind, right? We don't want to date ourselves. We don't want to lock ourselves into this is definitely from exactly this moment in history, and it's not necessarily relevant 5 years down the road, something like that. But at the same time, having something that is actually relevant to the current moment, and to not let that slip by, basically. So thinking about the themes that are important at the moment, and maybe it does look like the political angle might be getting a little bit more prominent these days, nation state adoption and the implications there, government involvement. And then there's all sorts of technical things, like maybe there's a layer two follow-up to be done here now that there is more than just Lightning going on here in the space, right? So we can basically, cycle through these larger categories, right? I've always liked Gigi's framing of Bitcoin has these three sides to it: the technological side, the financial side, and the philosophical side. That framing from 21 Lessons has always stuck with me. So I kind of would like to cycle through those three to a certain extent and hit on something that is big from each of those three areas as we go through time. Not necessarily sticking to that rigidly, but I think there's always something to draw inspiration from in those three areas. So I see that being a trend as we move this forward. What do you think of that, Alex?
Yeah, I think that's great. I think I'd also like to see Knut's favorite topic, like a theology edition. That'd be fantastic.
Absolutely. Why not? I mean, that's one of the areas where I've, changed my mind mostly over the years. I still have no belief in invisible friends, but I have a belief in people who believe in invisible friends. That has increased. Let's just say that. I think, like, if I have a vision for this, it's to find topics that are relevant for that year, but content that is completely timeless. Like, that's the thing. We don't want to be a news outlet. Like, we want this to be stand the test of time. And that's really hard. Like, it's hard to not be dated. But yeah, and I want, like, with all my writings, I want this thing as well to provoke thought in the reader. Like, that's what you want. You want the reader to start thinking. Stop. Bah, and just come to their own conclusions.
So yeah, I think this should give a picture here. This new project of ours, us taking this on, I'm thrilled for it. Excited to be taking this in the future. Yeah, you're obviously going to still be involved a fair bit. But we're taking over the day to day, so to say, the actually getting it done of the new editions and the publication itself. So, I want anyone involved to rest assured that you're still going to have a role in this thing going forward, even if it is just kind of shepherding this thing along in some identity. Things, but I have a feeling you'll be contributing articles and a whole bunch of other things going forward.
100%. Yeah, 100%. All right, gents.
You know what I'd like to do in addition on?
Tell me.
Epistemology, methodology.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Culture, like bro science. Does it have any merit? That's
sort of thing. I'll do the bro science piece, and Raheem can do the Austrian economics piece.
Yeah.
Who's doing the traditional academic reasoning piece?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Who wants to stand Robin. Up for that? Yeah. I think before we wrap up, Alex, give us an update on everything else that's been going on. Obviously, you talked about that Bushido is released. How's the launch going?
It's going well. We've sold in total, I think, including the pre-sales and the crowdfund, about 2,000 copies, maybe a little more. So it's off to a good start. Next year, I'm going to hit a bit of a podcast roadshow and talk more about some of the more controversial things in there. And I'm going to actually focus more of my time actually going on to non-Bitcoin podcasts. I want to kind of like enter the zeitgeist. Or enter the discussion in other areas. So that's that. And then beyond that, the focus is really going to be on Sitlantis. I just released an essay the other day, kind of grappling with what Sitlantis is. And it's been tough because when people ask me, like, oh, what problem are you solving? Mm-hmm. It's very hard because In building Sitlantis, we're not solving a specific problem. We're creating a new category of product. We're trying to build something that doesn't yet really exist. And it's got elements from multiple different products, but as a a super app for sovereign individuals, you know, for lack of a better term here, something like it doesn't actually exist today. And, you know, what we've got to do in some sense is we've got to understand who this archetype is, who this growing audience is, and understand what they're looking for. And we've got to carve out a new category for these people. So the majority of my time next year is going to go into really working through that and building something that becomes a hub for events, for locations, merchants, venues, discovery, people, all that sort of stuff that are within the frame of interest for who I'd consider sovereign individuals. And that's, you know, that includes Bitcoiners, but also includes people that essentially want more autonomy over their lives. And, you know, that goes beyond just Bitcoin.
So autonomous entities rather than sovereign individuals?
But yeah, maybe that's a better way to put it, you know?
Yeah.
Autonomous humans, non-NPCs. I don't know. I've got to find a
non-NPCs. That would just be PCs.
Yeah, PCs, exactly.
Yeah.
Or just Cs. Characters.
Yeah, there we go. Alex, is there anything else you'd like us to bring up here? Or
I think so. I think the important thing is that people know that Bitcoin Times is going to be making a strong comeback next year. Well, I guess depends when this podcast actually goes out. So it'll probably be this year. And that you lads are going to be at the helm with my continued support. And now they know the origin story, and you know, they got a sense of where it came from and where it's going to go. So it's interesting times.
Interesting times indeed.
It's always awesome to talk to you, man. And hey, looking forward to seeing you in person next time. And continuing to do awesome stuff. We're definitely following along with the Satlantis stuff, and I'm looking forward to reading Bushido as well. It's I know it's a time commitment, but I definitely want to make it. I know it's right up my alley. So yeah, man, keep doing what you're doing, and all of these efforts to get a little bit outside the Bitcoin space. There's a lot of value in that, and I think there's for sure a lot of value in us doing the same in different ways, though. Like we're leaning into the things that are important to us in the Bitcoin world as well, but we've also definitely thought about ways of getting the word out there in the broader community. So I mean, I think keep us posted on how that's going. Maybe there's some people we need to talk to there as well, both having on our show and you know, doing the pod tour thing as well. So yeah,
I think so for sure. All right, boys.
Hey, it's always been great talking to you, so take care, and until next time. Knut, any final words?
Spadoinkle, as usual.
You want to leave anyone with socials or anything, Alex?
Nah, it's all good. Spadoinkle as well, okay?
Yeah,
spadoinkle.
Take care, Alex. Always great chatting to you.
Always.